Hello and welcome to the Hindu's Parle podcast. I'm your host, Jasmine Nihalani. A week ago, Tamil Nadu Finance Minister Thangam Thinarasu accused the union government of showing a stepmotherly attitude towards the state over the devolution of funds. At a media conclave, Thiruvananthapuram Lok Sabha MP Shashi Tharoor spoke about the dangers that would arise with the enhanced political clout from the north once the freeze on Lok Sabha seats ends in 2026. These statements have brought the tussle over distribution of central taxes and delimitation of constituencies to the fore. To discuss this, we have Dr. Thomas Isaac, former Finance Minister of Kerala and a member of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of India, Marxist, and Balveer Arora, chairman of the Centre for Multilevel Federalism and former professor and rector at Jawaharlal Nehru University. I would like to begin with you, Dr. Isaac. In the recent past, several South Indian leaders have been vocal about the share that southern states get from central tax kitty. So where does this view that the southern states are being punished for this success stem from?
Particularly the Finance Commissioner ones, they decide not only on how much should be devolved from the center to the states, but also the distribution of these proceeds among the states. So these are based upon certain criteria, and the criteria they are chosen works against the southern states, because now the interstate distribution is based upon two factors. One, share in the population, and the other, the income distance ratio. That is how far the per capita income is higher or lower than the national average. So on both these counts, the southern states lose out. So you have a situation where there has been a very drastic decline in the resource share of the southern states. Say, for example, like Kerala, it was 3.8% during the 10th Finance Commission. Now it is 1.9%. So it's a very dramatic decline. This decline has been accelerating over time. This is one issue. The other issue is the delimitation of constituencies, which is also in the thinking. Now, how do you address these issues? I don't want to be very parochial that way. I accept the fact that in any federal system, the interstate transfer would have to have a component of equity, that the richer states and regions would have to contribute to the development of the states which are backward, because every citizen of the country has a right to have certain minimum uniform services across the nation. So I don't debate that, okay? But having accepted that, then the central government should have to think about two sets of issues. One, there has to be a limit to this difference in the transfer. It cannot be a process of increasing resource transfer, not producing the expected results in the states which are backward. So, because then it is not dependent upon resource transfer, so there is something else that you have got to do in these states, and you better think about that. So, this has to be contained with certain limits, this equity criteria. There are other criteria, growth, because growth begets secondary challenges, say, second generation problems in social sector. For example, Kerala, because it is focused upon say social sectors, have underinvested in say physical infrastructure, and therefore there is a serious physical infrastructure deficit in the state, and we need to set up investment in the. So this kind of specific problems will have to be given consideration. That's to say, you cannot have a national policy which accepts that one has fits for all. Because problems in states which are more developed are very different, and therefore you cannot have say mechanically implemented FRBM Act. I would like to have more fiscal space for borrowing and investing in the physical infrastructure. I am willing to accept the discipline of revenue deficit being zero. Well, we'll move towards that. But you know, given that, because you're doing better, your borrowing capacity is higher, you should be allowed to borrow more. So you have to give up this uniform national policy. So that's my demand for it, you see. And one, I would say there has to be a limit within which this UKT consideration can go. Second, I would say you have to have a region-specific FRBM Act. Second, regarding political delimitation, that is much more serious affair. There is nothing in the democratic polity which says that, say, we can have federal systems like in U.S., where states of their size are given certain level of representation, not the equivalent proportion to the population of the state. And more than that, national pledge was given in the parliament itself that the states which comply with the population policy won't suffer in future. We'll use the 1971 population basis for further calculation. Now, given that, I think there is nothing to say compulsion to change the ratio of representation in the parliament because you have implemented national policy better. I think this is a very, very serious issue and it can have very divisive consequences, which would mean that the southern states are being marginalized in the political sphere because that have done better.
Professor Balveer Arora, if you would like to respond to it.
I find myself in agreement with a lot of things that Dr. Isaac has said, and he is, with facts to support him, has made out a very strong case for having a creative and imaginative policy and not working towards uniformity without looking at the specific needs and the specific requirements of the equity principle. I think he has stated it, and I agree that has to be kept in the calculation, in the sense that there is a certain amount of cross transfers and of resources of redistribution across the federal polity, and those that is part of the price that one pays for being together, for being a union, and therefore sharing some of the burdens. But at the same time, the perspectives that are opening up are somewhat disturbing. One, of course, is the fact that asymmetry is being discarded for unity, what Dr. Isaac said, one size fits all. This obsession with one India, one this, one that, I won't go into the details, is something that doesn't suit our national genius. It doesn't suit our polity. It doesn't suit our society. It is incompatible with our history, which has always been in favor of diversity. So that is one point that I would insist on. The second thing is that we have this scenario. Are we going to sit back and just see the tragedy unfolding without being able to change it? I think we need a more proactive attitude, and we need to identify the points where intervention is required so that the union does not veer towards a unbalanced and disastrous course of development, or rather moving in a direction which could lead to fragmentation, which could lead to a breakup if these remedies are not found. So the first, I will make 3 points here. The first one, of course, is the focus on the 16th Finance Commission terms of reference. I think those are due very soon. It is time that a strong voice be raised for involving the states in the formulation of these terms of reference. I think that this practice of giving to the Finance Commission, which is for the union, but unilaterally being given terms of reference and then additional terms of reference without any consultation with the states, is something that doesn't fit well with a sound federal polity. So I think there should be a strong effort to see that the next Finance Commission, which is coming soon, has terms of reference which take cognizance of the problems that the federal polity is facing and don't turn a blind eye. Because, for example, if the population basis is being shifted from 71 to a new figure, then the weightage of population can be adjusted. It is not written in stone that it has to remain the same. If the basis has changed, the percentage can change. I'm just giving an example. I think we need to think on those lines. The second thing that I would like to say is that the states which have a common interest in terms of equivalent levels of development, social welfare as well as the Human Development Index, and which are in a sense the motors of development for the federal polity, it is time that they came together in some forum. A forum which should be purposeful and try to achieve the best bargain possible. Federalism is about bargaining and compromise. These are the two fundamental tenets in any federal arrangement. How do you bargain? I think a Southern Forum, meeting every 6 months with a rotating chair so that nobody is left out from the chairperson's seat, but focusing on projecting this view that unless the disparities and the differences are taken into account and remedied, you would have problems, serious problems, because you can't transfer resources if you are not producing them. And if where the resources are being produced, if there's not sufficient consideration or incentive for those states, ultimately the country will suffer. The third point that I would make is with relation to the delimitation and the possible increase in the number of seats. Now, one man, one person, one vote, the logic is absolutely inescapable. I am suggesting is that this same principle should not be, with modifications, should not be adopted for the Rajya Sabha, for the Council of States. There is nothing written in the Constitution as to what should be the basis for distribution of the seats in the Rajya Sabha. And there is no reason to follow blindly the figures that emerge from delimitation which apply to the Lok Sabha to reconfigure the Rajya Sabha also and redistribute the seats. I think a reasonable solution would be to freeze the seats of the Rajya Sabha at the level at which they are, rather than adjusting them in terms of population. So I think these are three very specific suggestions that I would make after listening to Dr. Isaac, that we need to act the forums for interstate consultation are not working. The interstate council is not working. He has experience of the GST, see the council, which is a very important forum, provided one can make it work in the proper direction, because you do have some sort of parity of voice among the states, but there are distortions. The Tamil Nadu chief minister, whom you quoted, took the view that the smaller states are influenced by the center and they want more higher rates of GST because they are the net beneficiaries. They get more from the kitty than they put in. It's a fact. But I think the way in which this mechanism can be made to work to supplement what the Finance Commission will come up with, and the need for the Finance Commission to take into account that a GST Council exists and it has to, is also responsible for allocating resources. So I think these are a few of the points that I wanted to put before you to, in fact, based on what Dr. Isaac had said.
Dr. Isaac, you raised the point about weightage that is given to population, but over time the weightage has been declining. It came down from 27.5% in 14th Finance Commission to 15%. At the same time, the Finance Commission has also tried to reward the progress that the states made by introducing the demographic performance criteria. So why is it that southern states feel that they are losing the share of the pie due to the population criteria?
Just before I come to that, I want to say I agree with generally what Aurora has just suggested. One is paramount importance that the states come together, particularly the southern states or advanced states, to discuss about the terms of reference of 16th Finance Commission. You know, for example, 15th Finance Commission, all the states, including BJP states, very, very critical of the terms of reference scheme. So that we shouldn't wait for the terms of reference to come, but start a dialogue on what should be the terms of reference of 16th Finance Commission. Secondly, there was a suggestion regarding having a platform for discussion and dialogue.
Over time, the weightage given to the population criteria in determining the share of taxes has come down. From 27.5% in 14th Finance Commission, it came down to 15% in the 15th Finance Commission. Income distance got the highest share. The 15th Finance Commission also gave importance to demographic performance to reward the states that made progress in reducing population growth to replacement level. This was done to ensure that the sudden change in population data won't become unfair to some states. So why is it that southern states feel they are losing their share of the pie due to the population criteria?
You see, as I told you, this was the outcome of a very vigorous campaign in which many states participated. In fact, initial meeting was dubbed as a meeting of the southern states, which I thought it was slightly parochial. Therefore, we broadened to include any states who were concerned about the standard state devolution formula. Now, as a result of this, though the shift in the population base here did take place, a compromise, I told you, was that you reduce the weightage for the population and also bring in another neutralizing criteria in terms of performance and additional amount, small amount given. Therefore, you have a person like Professor Rao of Bangalore. He has demonstrated. Therefore, the impact of population base year change has been very limited, unless what was really thought it would bring about. But you know, there's a high correlation between the population growth decline and the rate of growth of the economy. They're interrelated. And therefore, the income distance criteria played havoc. Kerala's has a very drastic reduction. Karnataka, Tamil Nadu, all of them. So this has not changed. The fact that population weightage has come down did not make the outcome very different because of the close relationship that exists between the rate of growth and the population decline. So still you will find the final outcome has been very much negative for the southern states. And that's why I say this will continue to be so because the south is growing better. Therefore, I am not going to argue, no, freeze it there. But what I'm going to argue is that keep this difference within the limits here. It cannot be open-ended going on because it plays a very serious problem with the financial management in the states. Because now the states have a little, you say, taxation powers of their own. As Aurora just mentioned, very rightly, the Tamil Nadu finance minister said, see, there was a time, I remember, in the just before the loss of election, when suddenly I was absent in that particular meeting, but they were competing with each other to reduce all the taxes here. Suddenly you find one tax bracket almost deleted and everything comes to 18%. 18% states gets only 9%. Under what states were getting 14%. So substantial reduction. So given this structure of taxation powers is very important. You cannot that the leeway is given to the advanced states. Recently, Kerala Finance Minister made a statement in the assembly that Kerala gets only 25 paise of the every 1 rupee that is cut from Kerala, while UP gets 1.6 rupees from every rupee collected from the state. Well, you know, I personally wouldn't want to vote for a bickering between the states. I want the states to come together. And it is very important to have certain broad limits within which these differences can widen.
Yes, no, there have been some efforts to offset the imbalance. The poorer states are the more populated states, and therefore the disadvantage that accrues to those states which have taken question of family planning seriously and have, for through other reasons of their own, have their populations have declined. I think the main point here, because it's also linked to the delimitation. After all, the political power balance within the federal polity will also shift if the delimitation increases substantially the number of seats in the Lok Sabha. You have a new building here which is ostensibly designed to accommodate many more MPs. So I think what I would insist on here and what I would say is important is that the states must get a space and voice in the decision making of federal finance. This is something that is untenable, that you have a unilateral, and it's not just the original terms of reference. As Dr. Isaac mentioned, later on some additional terms of reference were added on, and very tendentious ones, like should they be getting any money at all? Now, that kind of thing is not acceptable in a federal polity. To come back to the issue, I think the voices should begin to be raised to influence decisions, I don't have any illusions that the decision-making mechanisms will be changed overnight and suddenly the interstate council will be given a greater role and so on. No, I have no illusions that it's going to change dramatically. But I do think that voices must be raised and heard when public consultation is called for and when reactions are called for. I think there must be and if the voices unite, you said, Dr. Isaac, that it is parochial. No, I think if there is a forum, a Southern States forum, others are welcome to join. Don't keep it closed. But somebody has to take the initiative. And I think the initiative has to come from the Southern States who are the most affected. You will have others joining you. And if it emerges as a powerful lobby, democracy is about lobbies. Democracy is about pressures. Democracy is about bargaining and compromise. I think you have to play the game and play it as with as much voice and force as you can. Without being parochial, we are all committed to
national. No, yet we also look at the optics, how others perceive what we are saying. I just being cautious about that. Otherwise, I'm one with you that this cannot go on like this.
Yeah, no, I think I leave it to you to look after the optics, but I think it should be done.
The rationale provided by the Finance Commission for distribution of taxes within the states is that these transfers provide a level playing field for the states. An overwhelming proportion of poor live in low-income states, and these transfers are important to move them out of the poverty trap. These transfers are also needed to enable all states to provide comparable levels of public services. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think that this is happening?
No, it's not happening. In fact, the income distance between the states have widened since 1991. So also the kind of, if you take HDI index, in fact, the range has been widening. So despite the fact there is a limit, as you go up in the HDI index, advanced states, the progress is going to be very, very slow. Still, you find the range is widening. So this raises questions regarding development policies that are being pursued in these states. Let me put it this way, one example, say COVID, Government of India relaxed the borrowing limits to 5%. Many states did not fully use that window. And you had a strange spectacle of the unspent cash balance lying in the state's treasury is going to a obscene level of 3 lakh crores rupees. You know, in a situation of COVID times, I think I'm very being very generous. You have internalized this FRBM Act and this logic so much that even when permitted, you don't want to spend borrowed money on revenue expenditure, okay? In COVID, you cannot spend on capital expenditure. Therefore, they were lying idle in the money. See, this one example of totally misdirected development policy, or else you have a situation in all these states. So even before COVID, the unspent treasury balance, cash balance was 1.5 lakh crores of rupees. And poorer states were the biggest depositories of these funds. So I wonder, what prevents this money from being used for building schools, hospitals, and so on? And if it is very difficult, have an income redistribution policy. You give to the poorest, to the poor, some cash transfer, so they do better. So there is something fundamentally wrong with the development policies that are pursued. I think there is a lot to be learned from Kerala, Bengal, I mean, Tamil Nadu. Particularly Tamil Nadu, I will say. Kerala has been more historical, the tradition of redistribution. But Tamil Nadu is a perfect case where in a post-independent spirit, through a activist state intervening to redistribute, where systematic increase in the standard of living has taken place. So I think there is a lot to be learned from these states in the policies. So you are right, Rasmini. In fact, it's not, despite all this, that's why I say we need to have certain macroeconomic framework within which overall, say, fiscal deficit, etc. is contained. I'm not debating, it's not. But, you know, there is a situation, one, the central government does not comply with it any year. Their average fiscal deficit would be more near above 4% if you take the period of the FRBM Act as a whole. They have never been on zero revenue deficit. There's been always 2-3%. While the states on the whole have complied with the rest, on the whole. Okay, then a Kerala, an outlier, wants to do something else. Then you come with hammer and tongs against the state. You want to discipline them, and the preaching is given by whom? Yeah, guys who never have any self-discipline of their own. So this should stop. I feel that diversity of development path, not only culture, diversity of development path in the country should be accepted and celebrated also. Yeah, and that is important. So.
I think Dr. Isaac has made a very important point, is that you should practice what you preach. I think the center preaches a lot about and has the weapons to discipline the states, but when it violates its own tenets and norms and limits, there is no one to pull it up. Now, the question that here again, it comes to the fact that we don't have effective mechanisms for even sharing best practices. The consultation between the states, all the fora that were there, have fallen into disuse. And where the Niti Aayog is again a top-down standard norm-setting organization, which is looking at rankings and so on. Where there are lessons to be learnt, which is the body which is ready to process them, which is ready to listen. We need to attack it at that level also, because the problems that you have mentioned are very real, but unless the space and voice of those who are the motors of the economy, I would say, if their space and voice is not heard loud and clear, I think we have this continuing sorry spectacle of those who are themselves not able to put their house in order, telling others what to do.
My next question is about the formula that the Finance Commission uses to arrive at the share of states. For instance, population is multiplied when the demographic performance is being estimated. In doing so, a state like Uttar Pradesh, which had fertility rate of 2.61 in the calculation, gets the highest share. Is this the right way to arrive at the share?
No, I don't think it is appropriate to look at, in this specific context, the kind of extent of reduction in the fertility rate, because it suffers from a base year problem. because it has a very high fertility rate, their possibility of reduction in terms of percentages would be much higher than a state which has already reached near 1%, one unity. The growth has become unity. So therefore, that is not at all right. It in fact takes its impact of the additional criteria very minimal.
Yes, I totally agree that, you see, there has to be a limit somewhere as to how you bring in the weightage to the progressive productive forces of the economy, and you can cater to poor populations through a variety of ways. As Dr. Isaac said, DBT direct, you give them the money, let the money be raised first, let it be the productivity be raised, and then you figure out how to distribute it. But a blind insistence on the fact that the imbalance of populations between within the union, already the fact that you have a huge unwieldy state which weighs down to a large extent the economy. There have been proposals for reorganization. Right from the time of the State's Reorganization Commission, Sardar K.M. Panikkar said that, you know, you can't have this unbalanced polity. So these formula aggravate the problem. You have to put an end to it. What I am saying is that you need a holistic approach where population is one element, but the way in which you factor it in cannot be a mechanical thing which penalizes the more productive elements of the economy.
Moving on to delimitation, Article 81 of the Constitution says that each state should have seats in proportion to the population, and the constituencies should roughly have the same population. But we are using decades-old census to determine seat share in the Lok Sabha, and there is an imbalance in the number of constituents that an MP has in Tamil Nadu compared to a state like Uttar Pradesh. But at the same time, southern states argue that they will be penalized when the delimitation freeze ends by 2026. The Lok Sabha seats in Uttar Pradesh are likely to go up to 143, but Kerala may remain unchanged at 20. So, what is the way forward?
So, even within the existing constitution, there is nothing to prevent the Rajya Sabha seats remaining the same, or perhaps giving an additional weightage to states with the population going down. Now, whether it is that there is an absolute reduction in the number of seats, or the number of seats remain the same, but overall number of seats going up, the relative impact is the same, only that optically it looks that nothing has changed. I would still argue that the 1971 population base was something the first solemn promise that has been made when we adopted the new population policy. And we have so far continued with that thing. Therefore, I would say there will be nothing unconstitutional if it is continued for another decade or two.
But that would be like kicking the can down the road instead of finding a solution to it.
By that time, I hopefully that Uttar Pradesh and Bihar will catch up, the population come down, and things become normal.
Professor Balveerullah, how would you respond to it?
Yeah, no, I think it will eventually catch up with us. The question is not to treat it mechanically and not to take it in terms of exact equivalence. If you have a weighted formula, you can still work out a representative government without, but you will have constituencies even today. And after the proposed delimitation, you'll have hugely populous constituencies and sparsely populated constituencies. That will continue because of the disparities in the nature of the polity. But the important thing is how effective is the representation of all the vital forces of society. After all, your objective is to build a better economy, a better polity, a better society. So if your formula punishes those that are contributing to in this direction, then obviously there's something wrong with it. And I think as far as the Rajya Sabha is concerned, because it is the Council of States, it has been bypassed in recent years. Bills have been given a false label of finance bill when there was nothing financial in those to get past the opposition of the Rajya Sabha. I think that should be reconsidered, and whether we can create a genuine Council of States representing the states and put aside the imbalances of population that are distorting the representative system.
On that note, thank you, Dr. Isaac and Professor Balbir Arora, for joining us. It was a pleasure having you here. Thank you.
Thank you.